It would take a couple of days on the train to reach Boston, and Frank didn't plan to let his guard down during that time. The first night, he had to sit up, since he hadn't been able to book a sleeping compartment. The next morning, though, Frank made arrangements with the conductor for a berth for that night and the next, and the day after that, the train would arrive in Boston. Frank had ridden on plenty of trains in his life, but always in the West, where the scenery varied some. As these cars rolled across the farmland and low hills of Indiana and Ohio, he found himself growing bored as he looked out the window beside him. Frank knew, logically, that there were vast stretches of the frontier that were just as monotonous, but somehow it didn't seem that way to him.
Do you mind if I join you?
Out of habit, Frank took off his hat and nodded politely to him.
You're right ahead, ma'am.
I hope you don't think I'm being terribly forward, sir, but there are only a few seats available, and I know from experience that Western gentlemen such as yourself are more pleasant traveling companions than, well, men like him.
She tipped her head to indicate a man sitting by himself on the other side of the aisle, three or four seats toward the front of the car. His derby and loud, flashy suit marked him as a drummer of some sort. Frank knew that traveling salesmen were necessary for some businesses to succeed, but he didn't particularly like spending time with them any more than the lady sitting beside him did.
I'm Helen Jeffries.
Frank Morgan.
I'm very pleased to meet you, Mr. Morgan.
She was around 30 years old, Frank decided, with honey-colored hair under her stylish hat and a small mole on her right cheek that just made her smooth, creamy complexion seem even more attractive. Full red lips and blue eyes and a body with curves in all the right places under her expensive dress completed the picture. Frank glanced at her left hand. No wedding ring.
You're not traveling with your husband?
I'm a widow.
Sorry to hear that.
It's been several years since my husband passed away, so my sorrow has eased considerably. It was helped to do so by the money I inherited from him as well. Yes, I know, I'm too plain-spoken for my own good. But I never believed in beating around the bush. I'm fairly well-to-do, Mr. Morgan, and I've gotten that way by cultivating the company of well-to-do men.
Then maybe you shouldn't have picked a poor cowboy this time. I could be a mite plain-spoken myself sometimes.
I was telling the truth when I said I was looking for a pleasant traveling companion, and that's all I'm looking for on this trip. So don't worry, Mr. Morgan. I'm not going to spin any sort of sinister web to entrap you or anything like that. Just some enjoyable conversation will be fine.
Well, I reckon we understand each other then.
What's your destination?
Boston.
Are you traveling for business or pleasure?
Purely business.
Frank had long since given up on the idea of getting any pleasure out of settling the score with Charles Dutton. Killing him wouldn't bring Vivian back. And it wouldn't do anything to ease the sense of loss Frank felt whenever he thought about her. But it would make him feel that justice had been done. And besides, since Dutton was out to have him killed, forcing a showdown with the man was also a matter of self-defense.
Where are you from? Or should I not ask that of a Westerner?
I don't mind saying that I come from Texas originally, but I've been all over.
Fiddle-footed, eh?
You known some cowboys before. Otherwise, you wouldn't know what it means to be fiddle-footed.
I visited with several cattlemen in Kansas City.
Helen Jeffries had made it pretty plain that she was a high-class prostitute. But Frank believed her when she said she wasn't looking to hook him. Even a soiled dove couldn't be on duty, so to speak, all the time. And under other circumstances, if she'd had a dalliance in mind, he might not have objected. But he didn't want anything to distract him from the mission he was on. There was another possibility, too, that he couldn't ignore. She might be working for Dutton. Bearing that in mind, Frank intended to be mighty careful just how close he got to Helen Jeffries. By the time the train crossed from Ohio into Pennsylvania, Frank had spent several hours talking to Helen and enjoyed the conversation. She had traveled quite a bit herself and told him several stories about her visits to Denver and San Francisco. He enjoyed her company, even though he still didn't quite trust her.
That really happened?
Yes, ma'am. I'm afraid it did.
They were talking when a man passing by in the aisle stopped suddenly and stared at Frank.
Something I can do for you, partner?
Oh, beg your pardon, mister. It's just that I knew I'd seen you somewhere before, and I just remembered where it was. Cheyenne. 5 years ago, you were coming out of a hotel when the Rock Springs kid braced you. Man alive, I never saw such a fast draw. That crazy kid never had a chance, Mr. Morgan. You are Frank Morgan, aren't you?
That's right.
Oh, I've read some of the dime novels about you. I've got to say, after having seen you in action with my own eyes, even those stories don't do you justice. Why, you can kill a man in less than the blink of an eye. I saw you do it.
That's enough, friend. We don't want to upset the lady.
Oh, sorry, Mr. Morgan. I didn't mean any offense.
None taken. Now, if you'll excuse us.
Sure, sure thing. Ma'am?
Helen smiled and nodded at him, and when the man had moved on down the aisle, she turned to Frank.
Was he telling the truth? Are you really a famous gunfighter?
I've been in my share of shooting scrapes. Some would say more than my share.
Frank Morgan. You know, I thought that name was familiar for some reason, but I couldn't place it. And you said you're on your way to Boston on business? You're going to kill a man!
Frank didn't bother denying it. He just shrugged.
I'd hate to be the man that you're after. He must have done you a terrible wrong for you to be traveling all the way to Boston to deal with him.
It was bad enough.
I don't mean to pry. We'll just leave it at that, shall we?
Sounds fine.
Even though they tried to go back to the conversation they'd been having, there was something between them now. Helen's awareness that Frank was a killer.
Well, it's getting to be around supper time. Care to join me in the dining car?
I don't think so, Frank. Train rides always make me tired. I think I'll turn in early.
I understand. Have a pleasant evening.
Good night, Frank.
That sort of ruined Frank's appetite. So instead of going to the dining car, he headed for the club car instead, intending to have one of his infrequent drinks. When he entered the car, he spotted the man who had recognized him earlier in the day. Obviously, ever since then, the fellow had been in here drinking and telling stories about how the notorious gunfighter known as the Drifter was on this train.
Whiskey.
The bartender poured the drink and put it in front of him. Frank tossed back the liquor and felt the warmth it kindled in his belly. He hadn't been drunk since that bad time after Dixie died, and he didn't intend to get drunk now. But at moments like this, it was tempting.
Hey, Morgan!
Frank recognized the tone, and didn't want to turn around to acknowledge the man who had spoken. But he knew that if he didn't, the situation would just get worse. He swung around deliberately and put his back against the club car bar. Standing a few feet away, swaying slightly due to the motion of the train, was a young man, dutied up in Western clothes, but not the sort that any real cowboy would ever wear. The brim of his Stetson was curled tightly, and he had long hair down on his shoulders and a drooping mustache. The hombre had been reading too many dime novels about Wild Bill Hickok, Frank thought.
Something I can do for you?
I hear you're a fast gun.
There was a challenging note in the young man's voice. Frank felt weary, because he had heard that same note so often in his life.
You reckon you're faster than me?
I wouldn't know, and I don't have any interest in finding out.
The people say I'm pretty fast. I had gunfights in Cedar Rapids and Des Moines, and I'm still here.
Gunfights in Iowa? Is that where all the real shootists spend their time?
What's that supposed to mean?
Look, kid, you're headed the wrong direction.
What the hell you mean by that, old man?
You're going east. Farther you go that way, the more civilized folks get. They don't take kindly to gunfights. Got laws against them and everything.
I don't care about that. What I want to know is who's faster, you or me.
Why don't we just say that you are and let it go at that?
You do that? You'd back down rather than draw against me.
The other men in the club car started edging to the sides, trying to get out of the way as much as they could.
I don't want to kill you, son. And I sure as hell don't want you killing me. If we draw against each other, one of those things is bound to happen.
It won't be me, Dine. It'll be you, you washed up old fart.
Yeah.
Years of experience told Frank that he wouldn't be able to avoid this fight. The youngster had gone into what he thought was a gunfighter's crouch, with his hand hovering over the butt of the revolver on his hip, ready to hook and draw.
Come on, old man! You're gonna either draw or dance. You decide.
You call the tune, kid. It's up to you to start the ball.
As soon as the words were out of Frank's mouth, the youngster's hand flashed toward his gun. The kid was driven backward. He went up in the air and landed on his back on a table inside a booth on the far side of the club car. The youngster's face was twisted in lines of pain and surprise as Frank came over to him, still covering him with the peacemaker.
Sorry you made me do that, Iowa.
How can you be so fast? You're so old.
Before Frank could answer, the youngster's head fell back and his eyes glazed over. He was gone.
You haven't slowed down any, Mr. Morgan. That was really something.
Yeah, it was something, all right. A damn waste.
Frank wondered if word of this killing was going to get back to Helen Jeffries. If it did, he told himself, she sure as hell wouldn't want to have anything else to do with him. Frank didn't see Helen again that night or the next day. But in the evening, as he ate supper by himself in the dining car, she appeared at his table.
Do you mind if I join you, Mr. Morgan?
Help yourself. It's good to see you again, Mrs. Jeffries.
Helen sat down. Frank settled back down in his chair. A waiter came over, and Helen gave him her order. Then she looked levelly at Frank.
I hear there was some trouble yesterday evening.
I'm sorry to say that's true.
It's not often that there's a gunfight in the middle of a club car.
First time I remember being involved in one.
You've been involved in so many gunfights, you have to stop and think about where each of them took place? Or are there just too many to remember?
Some things a man doesn't forget.
Well, from everything I've heard, this one wasn't your fault. You had no choice but to defend yourself.
That's right.
So no one can hold that against you. No one knows better than I do that sometimes you have to do things you don't particularly want to do in order to survive.
The waiter brought her food then, and for a few minutes, she and Frank ate in companionable silence. Frank took his time with his meal, so that they finished about the same time.
Would you like to go get a glass of wine in the club car?
You don't mind going there? After what happened, I mean.
It's just a railroad car. I don't believe much in ghosts.
Actually, what I'd really like is some fresh air. These cars get so stuffy.
Well, fresh air is usually in short supply on a train. We could open a window. That'll just let in more of the smoke from the locomotive.
Yes, but sometimes the air on the rear platform of the passenger car furthest away from the engine isn't too smoky.
Well, then we should give that a try.
From the rear platform, Frank looked at the Pennsylvania landscape rolling past. The train would be reaching Philadelphia in another hour or so. Unlike the vast reaches of the West, where night usually brought utter darkness, there were a lot of lights in these parts, from frequent farmhouses and little towns. That was just another reminder of how many people lived in the East, as opposed to the West.
You can smoke if you wish.
I smoke a pipe every now and then, but it's in my war bag. Anyway, we came back here to get away from the smoke, didn't we?
Is that the only reason we came back here, Mr. Morgan? Or should I call you Frank?
Frank knew she wanted him to kiss her. He was about to do just that when the door into the car opened and a man stepped out onto the platform with them, followed closely by another man. The second man pulled the door shut behind them. Frank looked at them, noticing that their faces were set in hard, determined lines.
Well, hell.
I'm sorry, Frank.
Helen took a gun out of her bag and pressed the barrel against his back.
Please don't make this any harder than it has to be.
You're no whore. You're an actress.
Whore, actress, it's all the same thing. Women use all the tools at their disposal to get what they want, and I'm no different, Frank.
What you want is Dutton's money.
I'm accustomed to a certain style of living. I'll do whatever it takes to maintain that.
Stop yammering!
The larger of the two men took a knife from under his coat.
Let's kill him and get it over with!
He drove the blade at Frank's chest. Frank twisted away. Frank caught hold of the knife wielder's arm and grasped it tightly as he brought his knee up. The injured assassin lost his balance and pushed against Helen before falling to his knees on the platform.
Ah, you busted my damn arm!
Frank snatched up the little pistol Helen had dropped and drew his own gun as he straightened.
Easy, bud.
Frank put his back against the railing and covered the would-be assassins.
Reckon we'll have to do some talking to the law when we get to Philadelphia.
Suddenly, the train gave a mighty lurch. Someone inside, maybe a confederate of these killers, must have pulled the emergency cord. The second man was armed with a knife, too, and now he lurched forward and slashed across the back of Frank's hand, making him drop the peacemaker. Helen reached up and grabbed hold of the pocket pistol and pulled it down. Frank found himself wrestling with both of them as he tried to keep the man from stabbing him. The pistol abruptly went off again. Frank hadn't pulled the trigger, so he knew that Helen must have as she tried to wrest the weapon from him. She hadn't meant to, though, because she fell back, pressing both hands to her chest. Dark blood welled between her fingers. Frank didn't have time to worry about her. He still had his hands full defending himself against the man with the knife. Not only that, but the one with the broken arm got back into the fight by lunging against Frank's leg and throwing him off balance. Frank suddenly found himself with nothing underneath him but empty air. In a desperate grab, he caught hold of the railing around the platform and swung out away from the car, with only the strong grip of his fingers saving him from a possible deadly fall to the roadbed.
You killed her! I'll cut your damn fingers off!
Frank had no choice but to let go as the knife flashed toward his hand where it gripped the railing. He hit the ground hard, the rocks of the roadbed digging painfully into his flesh through his clothes. The train wasn't going very fast by now, though, and he was able to break his momentum by rolling over and over. He came to a stop on his belly as the train finally shuddered to a halt a few yards away. Colt flame lit up the night as the man on the platform picked up Frank's peacemaker and fired it at him. The little pistol Frank had taken away from Helen was still in his left fist. Shooting left-handed with an unfamiliar gun, Frank sent two shots at the platform, aiming for the muzzle flash. The man slumped back against the door, holding his belly where the small caliber bullets had dug into him. Then he collapsed on the platform. That left only Helen and the man with the broken arm, who lifted his good arm as Frank stood up and trotted toward the platform.
Don't shoot, Morgan! I give up, damn it!
Frank swung up on the platform, ignoring the pain from the battering his body had taken when he fell from the train.
Have you got a partner inside this car? Who pulled that emergency cord?
The answer came as the door was jerked open. Frank's bullet made the third hombre spin off his feet. Frank was surprised to see that he was the man who had recognized him a couple of days earlier. He realized now that the man had been working with Helen and her henchmen. It was even possible that the man had goaded that kid from Iowa into picking a gunfight with him. His Colt lay on the platform where it had been dropped. Frank scooped it up now and checked on the two men he had gunned down.
Frank!
Frank knelt in front of her, at the same time keeping an eye on the man with the broken arm. All the fight seemed to have gone out of that gent, but Frank knew better than to risk his life on that assumption.
What is it, Helen?
Am I going to die?
I'd say there's a good chance of it. You lost a lot of blood.
I'm sorry, Frank. For what it's worth, most of what I told you was true, and I enjoyed talking to you.
But yet you were willing to kill me.
She smiled faintly. Her face was unmarked and as beautiful as ever, despite the lines of strain on it.
A girl does what she has to get by.
Frank didn't think that was a very good explanation, but there was no point in arguing about it now. Not with the rest of Helen's life being numbered in minutes or even seconds.
I'm sorry we couldn't have met under different circumstances.
So, bye-bye, Frank. Be careful. Dutton will stop at nothing. I know him. How evil he can...
Frank knew she was gone, even as she was trying to warn him. But she wasn't telling him anything he wasn't already aware of. He knew perfectly well how evil Charles Dutton was. The train's conductor had been unhappy with the first shooting outside of Pittsburgh. Not surprisingly, he was even more upset this time. There were two corpses instead of one, plus a fellow with a broken arm and two bullets in his belly.
Oh, I'm just damn glad that my part of this run ends in Philadelphia. Somebody else can deal with all the death and gunplay the rest of the way to Boston.
I hope there won't be any more trouble.
You can hope all you want, Morgan, but from what I know about you, trouble seems to follow you around.
Well, I can't argue that point with you. Look, I'm sorry, but I got to get to Boston as fast as I can. If there was another way to get there, I'd take it.
You'll have to talk to the law when we pull into Philadelphia, you know.
I'll be glad to. Mrs. Jeffries died by accident, and the two men I shot in self-defense.
That's not the story that gent with the broken arm and bullet holes is telling.
What?
He's back in the caboose now, getting tended to by a doctor who happened to be on the train. And the story he's telling to anybody who will listen is that he and his friends were on that platform with Mrs. Jeffries when you came barging out of the car, picked a fight with him for no reason, and started shooting.
That's a damn lie.
I happen to believe you're right. But what the law will believe, I couldn't say.
I'm going back there to have a talk with that son of a...
Sorry, Morgan, you're not going anywhere. The caboose is off limits to you, and by God, I will enforce that. The engineer, the fireman, the brakeman, and all the porters will back me up, too. So unless you want to try to shoot your way through all of us...
I'll wait and let the law handle things. But that bastard is lying.
Once we get to Philadelphia, it won't be my problem anymore.
Frank had gone back to his compartment and waited. When the train stopped in Philadelphia, he stayed where he was. If the law dogs wanted him, they could come to him. That was exactly what happened. About half an hour after the train stopped, a man in a suit and bowler hat stepped into the compartment. The stranger was short and stocky and had a face like a bulldog with a mustache.
Detective Sergeant Harvey Bastrop. And you'd be Mr. Frank Morgan?
That's right.
I understand you were involved in a shooting on this train earlier tonight as well as one yesterday.
None of those fracases were my idea.
But you're still alive and three other people are dead. You're either a very lucky man or a very dangerous man, Mr. Morgan.
I think you know who I am. There's no point in beating around the bush.
No, there's not. You're a gunfighter. A hired killer.
I don't hire out my gun. If I draw, it's to protect my life or the life of somebody else, or to fight for a cause I believe in.
You think that's the way to fight for a cause? With a gun?
Too many times, that's the only way that does any good.
Well, that's not the way we do things here in civilization. This ain't the Wild West, cowboy.
No, and in a lot of ways, that's a damn shame.
I've heard one side of the story. Tell me yours.
First of all, I know a little bit about the law. Those shootings didn't happen in Philadelphia. I'm not sure you have any jurisdiction in this matter, Detective Sergeant.
Well, you're in Philadelphia now, mister. So you just let me worry about things like jurisdiction. I can have you locked up until everything gets sorted out, if that's what you want.
Frank didn't want anything else delaying him on his way to the showdown with Dutton in Boston.
I plan to cooperate. The fella I shot yesterday was a blasted young fool who thought he was faster than me and was determined to prove it. He died for his trouble.
There are witnesses who say that he drew first.
That's right, he did.
Well, why didn't you just shoot him in the arm or the leg? Couldn't you have wounded him without killing him?
Were you in the war, Sergeant?
The Civil War, you mean?
The War of Northern Aggression, some call it.
I wasn't old enough to fight in the war, but I remember it.
Ever had somebody shoot at you since you've been a policeman?
Well, what does that have to do with anything?
When somebody's drawn a gun with the obvious intention of killing you, you don't have time to think about things like wounding them. That kid wasn't very fast, but when I say that, I mean in comparison with me.
A little full of yourself, ain't you?
I'm just stating the facts. He was slow compared to me, but that doesn't mean he couldn't get his gun out and fire it in a hurry. A second or a second and a half, maybe. That's not enough time to get fancy. I drew and shot in self-defense. That's all there is to it.
What about the gent with the broken arm, Mr. Childress? Says you attacked him and his friends without provocation.
No provocation other than the fact they were trying to murder me.
Can you prove that? Did anyone else see what happened?
No, there weren't any witnesses back there on that platform. But this fella Childress can't prove what he says either, can he? It's his word against mine.
Now why would they want to murder you?
Frank still didn't want the police involved in his mission, but he didn't see any way around answering Bastrop's question.
They're working for a man in Boston named Charles Dutton.
Who's that?
A man who wants me dead.
Why would he want that?
Because he was responsible for the death of a woman I loved, and he knows that I'm coming to kill him.
It was a damned fool thing to say, and Frank knew it. Bastra puffed up like a horned toad.
Mr. Morgan, I'm afraid you're going to have to come down to police headquarters with me.
But the train will pull out without me. I have to get to Boston.
Well, you'll just have to catch a later one. That is, if you see the outside of a jail cell anytime soon.
Bastrop grabbed his arm to haul him off the train. Frank pulled away, and for a second, the air between the two men was thick with potential violence. In the end, though, Frank knew that he couldn't gun down a policeman for doing his job, no matter how wrong-headed the man was.
I want your gun!
I'm not used to giving up my iron.
You'll do it, or there'll be another charge against you.
Reluctantly, Frank drew the peacemaker from its holster and handed it over to Bastrop.
Come on!
They walked to the end of the car and stepped down onto the platform of the train station in the middle of Philadelphia. Even though it was the middle of the night, the place was bustling with activity. That was another thing about these Easterners, Frank thought. They didn't know when it was time to go to bed.
Let's go!
They had walked only a few feet when three men stepped out of the crowd, and Frank knew suddenly that something was wrong. The men were hard-faced and wore long overcoats that were too heavy for the warm, muggy night.
Detective, watch out!
That was as far as he got before the trio of assassins brought sawed-off shotguns out from under their coats and opened fire. Frank gave Bastrop a hard shove that sent the detective sprawling to the platform. At the same time, Frank went the other way in a desperate dive. Most of the buckshot ripped through the air between the two men, since the charges hadn't had time to spread much. A few of the pellets stung Frank's back and legs, though, and judging by the way Bastrop howled in pain, he had been nicked too.
Get him! Get Morgan!
If Bastrop hadn't taken his gun away, Frank could have shot it out with the men and taken his chances. But he was unarmed, and he figured that each of the men had fired only one barrel. That meant there were three more loads of buckshot in those guns, just waiting to rip him to shreds.
Help! Call the police!
He rolled aside as one of the men fired the second barrel. The charge slammed into the platform where Frank had been a heartbeat earlier. As Frank came to a stop on his belly,
Morgan!
Frank looked up to see his peacemaker spinning across the platform toward him. Bastrop had slid the gun to him. Frank put out his hand and felt the butt of the Colt slap into his palm. From there, pure instinct took over. He rolled onto his side and brought the revolver up. The man who had fired both barrels of his shotgun was trying to reload it, so he wouldn't be a threat for another second or two. That gave Frank enough time to concentrate on the other two men. The twin barrels of their weapons were swinging toward him and were about to come in line. He couldn't risk hitting them in the body. They might still have time to pull the triggers before they died. Headshots was his only chance. The heads of both men jerked back as Frank's bullets slammed into them, boring through their brains and blasting out the backs of their skulls. The men hit the platform like the lifeless sacks of meat they had become in less than the blink of an eye. Frank swung the Colt toward the third man, who had just snapped his shotgun closed after thumbing fresh shells into both barrels. Those barrels were still pointed down, though, and in the man's eyes, Frank could see the horrible realization that if he tried to lift the weapon, he was going to die, suddenly and violently.
Don't! Don't shoot! Don't kill me! Please don't shoot me!
Frank kept the peacemaker trained on the man as he pushed himself to his feet. He could tell that the buckshot wounds he had suffered were minor, little more than scratches, although they stung, and he could feel the warm trickle of blood from some of them.
Somebody give me a hand here. Thanks, young man. Now, go find some cops. Tell them Detective Sergeant Bastrop needs some help.
You, want my gun back, Sergeant?
No, that's all right. You keep this son of a bitch covered. Oh, damn it, Morgan. I didn't like you one damn bit, and you had to go and save my life.
Like I said, sometimes you just don't have a chance to think about what you're doing.
Bastrop looked as though he wasn't sure whether he wanted to cuss or laugh. He settled for turning to the prisoner.
So why did you and your partners try to kill us?
We weren't after you. We just wanted
to kill Morgan. That's what you were going to say, ain't it? You bastards must work for Charles Dutton.
The look of recognition and surprise that the shotgunner couldn't conceal told Frank that the charge Bastrop had just made was correct. More importantly, Bastrop saw the man's reaction too, and was smart enough to know what it meant.
Well, looks like you were telling me the truth about what happened earlier, Morgan. I still don't like you trigger-happy cowboys.
But you have to admit, there are times when we come in handy.
Yeah, there are definitely times when it's good to have one of you around.
With proof that Frank's story about how Dutton's agents wanted him dead was true, Bastrop was no longer so inclined to cause trouble for him. The fact that Frank had probably saved his life certainly didn't hurt anything either. Frank hadn't seen anything of Philadelphia except the blood-stained platform at the train station. In a way, he regretted that, because he knew from his reading that the city of brotherly love had played an important part in the history of the country. But sightseeing wasn't as important as his mission. Likewise, if things had been different, he would have enjoyed seeing some of New York City when the train made a stop there. It occurred to him that most of the dime novels he had seen that featured him as the hero, or villain, originated in New York, and the thought of walking into the publisher's offices and confronting them with the genuine article brought a chuckle to his lips, but there had been no time for that. On the way into Boston, Frank had gotten a look at the city sprawled on several hills around Boston Harbor and the Charles River. He wondered idly which of those heights was Bunker Hill, famous as the site of an early battle in the Revolutionary War. He figured nobody would ever write poems or sing songs about the battle he intended to fight in Boston. It was the middle of the morning when he disembarked in the busy, crowded station. The crowds meant that he had to keep a close eye on everyone around him. No one bothered him, though, as he went over to a counter with a sign above it that read Information. A skinny young man in a suit, with slicked down hair and pince-nez spectacles, stood behind the counter. His eyes widened at the sight of Frank's range clothes, Stetson, and Colt Peacemaker.
You can't wear that gun in here. We have laws.
Well, I'm sure you do. I feel a mite undressed without it.
I'm gonna call a policeman.
Listen, mister, I'm not looking for trouble, just some information. Like the sign says. How do I go about finding somebody in this town?
Who are you looking for?
A lawyer named Dutton.
You'll need a lawyer. You go parading around town wearing a gun.
Well, the sooner I get out of this train station, the sooner I won't be your problem anymore, right?
The clerk scowled, but reached down below the counter to bring up a thick book. He set it in front of Frank.
This is a city directory. You ought to be able to look up the address you need.
Much obliged.
Frank began paging through the directory, looking for Charles Dutton's address.
Couldn't you maybe put the gun in your duffel bag?
It's a war bag. I don't rightly know what a duffel is.
Are you going to war?
You could say that.
And that was true, because he had just found Charles Dutton's name and the address of the lawyer's office. The clerk at the information counter told him how to find Beacon Street and which trolley to catch just outside the station. Well aware that he was the object of plenty of curious stares, Frank left the station and rode one of the electric trolley cars to his destination. It was a solid-looking office building on a street that led up a hill to where some of Boston's finest homes overlooked the city. After all the time he had spent getting here, and all the trouble he'd had along the way, when Frank stood in front of the building, he had to pause for a moment before going in. It seemed hard to believe that he could just walk into that office and ask to see the man he had come to kill. His mind flashed back to a conversation he'd had with Conrad Browning, his son, Vivian's son.
And that's what you'd do if you saw him. You'd gun him down in cold blood.
Yeah, I think. I don't know.
Have you ever done anything like that before?
No, never. All of the men who have fallen to my bullets have been trying to kill me, or somebody else.
I can't see you doing it, Frank. Gunning someone down, even Dutton, in cold blood. That's not the kind of man you are. I want him dead as much as you do. He stole something from me, too. But not that way. Not if it makes you into the same kind of murderer that he is.
Well, I wouldn't worry about it. I doubt I'll ever have the chance.
Can I help you, sir?
The voice shook Frank out of his reverie. A young, pretty woman behind a desk looked up at him with a smile, despite her obvious surprise at seeing a cowboy walk in.
Sir, can I help you?
Yeah, I'm looking for Charles Dutton.
The words sounded forced and strange as they came out of Frank's throat.
Oh, Mr. Dutton isn't in the office this week. He's at his summer home out in Magnolia.
Gone? Dutton was gone?
Magnolia? Where's that?
On the North Shore. What they call Boston's Gold Coast.
How'd I get there?
One of the trolley lines runs to all the North Shore communities. Just look for a car that says Magnolia Station. When you get there, anybody can tell you how to find Mr. Dutton's home.
Much obliged for your help, ma'am.
Are you a real cowboy or are you in a show?
The genuine article, ma'am.
The trolley ride took a little more than an hour, but the car finally pulled into Magnolia Station. Frank had already seen that this oceanfront community was small, but it was surrounded by vast green estates dotted with mansions. It came as no surprise to him that Dutton lived in a place like this. The lawyer had made a lot of money bilking and betraying his clients.
Excuse me, where can I find Charles Dutton's house?
See that road over there? Just follow it for about a half mile down to the shore. You can't miss the place.
Thanks. You reckon I could leave this bag here for a while?
Sure. I'll put it behind the counter and keep an eye on it for you, Tex.
Like any man who had been raised in cow country, Frank didn't cotton much to walking. The rule of the range said any job that couldn't be done from the back of a horse just wasn't worth doing. But this close to his quarry, Frank was damned if a little walk was going to stop him now. As he followed the road toward the water, he thought about everything that had happened, about all the trails that had brought him to this spot. He wondered if Dutton had a family, and if so, would they be here at this summer home with him? That was likely, Frank decided. And again, he was assailed by uncharacteristic doubts. All his life, he had moved straight ahead, always reasonably sure of his best course of action. Now, in these surroundings that were so strange to him, he wasn't certain what he was going to do. There was the Atlantic Ocean, with a brisk breeze blowing off it that carried the tang of salt. Frank ran his tongue over his lips and tasted the salt there as well. The landscape rolled gently down to the water. On a knoll to his left stood a huge white house with columns in front of it, supporting a balcony over the veranda. A cobblestone drive that was at least 100 yards long led to the house. As Frank began walking along the drive, he was in plain sight, an easy target for anybody who might be drawing a bead on him from the house. On the lawn to his right, between the house and the water, were flower beds and shrubs, but nothing that offered any good cover. Frank kept walking. He had come too far to turn back now. The man who stepped out of the house had a tweed suit, a fancy vest, a tie with a glittering stick pin in it, a big belly, a derby hat, a red handlebar mustache, and a Winchester that he held like he knew how to use it.
You'd be Morgan.
That's right. But you're not Charles Dutton.
Mr. Dutton asked me to meet you here. He gave me a message for you.
What's that?
He said to tell you that you can either go back where you came from...
Or?
Or you can go to hell. I'll be glad to send you there.
By yourself, amigo?
Nope. Me and my friends, cowboy.
And from the corners of his eyes, Frank saw the men who stepped around both ends of the big house, three on each side, six in all, and all of them carrying rifles.
What'll it be, Morgan? I'm hoping you'll choose hell.
Say hello to the devil for me, because you'll be there first.
The revolver roared. The bullet smashed into Handlebar's chest and drove him backward through the open door of the mansion. Frank was moving before the man hit the ground. He spun toward the men on his right, threw a shot at them that came close enough to make them duck, and continued whirling around to fire at the men on the left. One of them staggered and fell to his knees. Then Frank turned and plunged across the lawn, heading for the water. Everything had been too easy once he got to Boston. The girl at Dutton's office, the clerk at the trolley station. They had been told that when a cowboy showed up looking for Dutton, they were to cooperate and tell the Westerner exactly where to find him. He didn't know where Dutton really was, but he would have been willing to bet that the crooked lawyer wasn't inside the mansion. Dutton was probably somewhere far away, waiting for his hired killers to report to him that Frank Morgan was finally dead. As a slug plucked at his sleeves, Frank left his feet in a long dive that carried him behind some shrubs. He knew the plants wouldn't stop a bullet, so as he hit the ground, he rolled over a couple of times and then crawled quickly to his right. Dutton's hired killers continued firing at the spot where he had disappeared, but they weren't content to do only that. They sprayed their lead in other directions, too. Frank stayed as low to the ground as he could as he crawled over the close-clipped grass, but some of the bullets still came too close for comfort. When he had gone about 50 yards, he stopped and lay there, motionless and silent, waiting to see what was going to happen next. Gradually, the shooting died away. Frank knew what the men were wondering. They thought that maybe they had hit him, that he might already be lying out here dead. But there was only one way to find out for sure.
Where's Chuck?
Chuck's dead. I saw him go down when Morgan shot him.
Maybe he's just wounded.
Morgan's not the sort of man who would shoot to wound. When he pulls the trigger, somebody dies.
It's nice to be well thought of by people who are being paid to kill you.
Spread out. We'll look for him.
I don't know about that, Larry. He could be playing possum.
As much lead as we threw out there, we're bound to have hit him. If he's not dead, he's wounded at least.
You just keep on believing that, Larry.
Frank heard quiet footsteps as the men spread out and began to search the park-like estate. They were trying to be stealthy about it, but to the ears of a Westerner, they sounded about as clumsy and noisy as a herd of buffalo. Frank waited patiently until the first man stepped through a gap in the shrubbery. Frank surged up, knowing the shot would draw the others. He grabbed the Winchester out of the man's hand and holstered his Colt. Then he took off for an outbuilding he spotted at the water's edge.
There he goes! Don't let him get to the boathouse!
So that's what it was. All Frank knew was that it would give him better cover than any of the shrubs on the lawn. As the men ran after him, Frank paused and spun around long enough to crank off three rounds from the rifle. One of the killers did a backward flip like he had run into an invisible wall. The others dived for cover. That gave Frank the time he needed to reach the boathouse. He jerked the door open and ran inside. The place was actually built out over the water on thick wooden piers. It was almost as big as some barns Frank had seen. Big doors at the far end could be opened to let the yacht that was berthed here steam out and then raise its sails. The boat was just one more sign of Charles Dutton's ill-gotten wealth. The walls of the boathouse appeared to be thick enough to stop a bullet. If the killers who were left wanted him, they would have to come in here to get him. Either that or force him out, Frank thought, as he smelled smoke. He looked toward the door where he had come in and saw gray tendrils seeping in around it. The bastards had set fire to the boathouse. The Winchester fired 45 caliber cartridges, just like the Colt on Frank's hip. He took fresh rounds from the loops on his gun belt and thumbed them into the rifle until it was fully loaded. Then he replaced the spent rounds in the peacemaker. That left him with only a few extra bullets, but if he couldn't end this with the ammunition already in his guns, it probably wasn't going to matter if he could reload or not. The smoke was getting thicker inside the boathouse, and he could hear the crackling of the flames now. The air was hotter, too.
Morgan! Morgan, can you hear me? Come out of there, and we won't shoot!
Wasn't born yesterday, Larry!
Frank looked down at the water lapping gently at the hull of the yacht. He wasn't sure how deep it was, or how much space was under the boathouse, but it would have to be enough. He looked around quickly, found a coiled rope in a storage cabinet, and slipped it over his shoulder. Then he sat down on the edge of the plank flooring, held the Winchester in his left hand and the Colt in his right, and slid off into the water. He held the weapons as high as he could, hoping to keep them from being submerged, and sure enough, his boots hit the bottom when he was only neck deep. He looked around underneath the boathouse. There were a couple of feet of leeway between the water and the floor. Frank was glad he wouldn't have to go underwater and swim out of here. There were at least three unwounded men out there. Larry would have them covering the front and sides of the boathouse in case the fire drove Frank out in one of those directions. But from shore, they couldn't cover the seaward end of the boathouse. Frank began making his way toward it, still holding the rifle and pistol up out of the water. He had to duck his head a little for the crown of his hat to clear as he reached the end of the boathouse. Salt water sloshed into his mouth and nose. Frank looked up at the building looming over him. He had thought that he remembered seeing a weather vane on top of the boathouse as he was running toward it, and sure enough, there it was, turning a little in the breeze that blew from offshore. The big doors had a little lip along the bottom of them. Carefully, Frank placed the Winchester and the Colt on that lip. Then he took the rope off his shoulder. His fingers were cold from the water, and the rope was the sort used on a boat, not a supple lasso like the ones Frank had used in his cowboying days. But some things, once learned, could never be unlearned, and after a minute or two, he was able to fashion a loop in one end of the rope. The loop rose up and up until it reached the end of its flight, then dropped and landed so that it was around the weather vane. Frank jerked the loop closed and hoped that the weather vane was secured tightly enough to the roof to support his weight. It would have to be, since it represented his best and maybe only chance to come out of this corpse and cartridge session alive. Holding firmly to the rope, Frank hauled himself up out of the water far enough so that he could get a foot on the lip at the bottom of the door. He let go of the rope with one hand and reached down to pick up his Colt and holster it. Then he retrieved the Winchester and passed the rope through the cocking lever. He shifted his grip on the rope to a spot underneath the rifle so that he could work it up with him as he climbed. Then he started walking up the seaward end of the boathouse.
Anybody see Morgan?
Nothing over here, Larry!
Where the hell are you, Morgan?
Frank let go of the rope with one hand and lunged upward, reaching for the edge of the roof. He caught it and took enough of his weight off the rope to keep the weather vane from pulling loose entirely.
There now, Morgan. That wasn't so hard, was it?
Frank knew there was no time to waste because the fire had eaten away at the front of the building. He didn't want the roof to collapse underneath him and dump him into that inferno below. He had to make his move now if he was going to. He freed the Winchester from the rope, clutched it tightly in both hands, bent forward in a crouch, and ran toward the front of the boathouse. He left his feet just before he reached the part of the roof that was on fire, putting all the strength he could into the leap. As he came out of the smoke, he saw the ground rushing up at him. His hat flew off his head. Frank had jumped as far out in front of the boathouse as he could, and the slope of the ground meant that he wouldn't fall the entire height of the building. But he fell hard enough so that the impact when his booted feet hit the ground jolted all the way through him. He rolled forward, letting his momentum break some of the force of the fall.
Now what the hell?
It's Morgan! Get him!
Spotting one of the men to his left, Frank came up on one knee and opened up with the Winchester. Frank dived forward onto his belly as a bullet burned across his upper right arm. Another slug kicked dirt into the air beside him. He twisted and fired from his prone position, sending a couple of rounds into the belly of one of the remaining gunmen. The fourth and final man turned to run, but Frank clipped him on the thigh with a slug that knocked him off his feet. Battered and hurting, and not a little surprised that he was still alive while all of his enemies seemed to be down, Frank stood up and slowly walked toward the man he had just wounded. He threw the Winchester to the ground and drew his peacemaker.
I can only think of one reason I shouldn't just blow your brains out, you son of a bitch. Where's Dutton?
I don't know. Honest, Morgan, I don't have any idea. He made arrangements with Larry and Chuck for them to set up this ambush for you. They hired the rest of us. That's all I know, I swear.
Is Dutton in the house?
I don't know. I don't think so. I got the feeling from the way Larry and Chuck talked that he left town. Left us here to deal with you.
That's pretty much what I figured.
You're gonna kill me, aren't you? You're gonna shoot me again.
Don't reckon I have to. From the looks of the way that blood's pumping out of your leg, I must have nicked an artery with that shot. I expect you'll bleed to death in another few minutes.
The man looked down at his wounded leg and the pool of dark red blood that was forming underneath it. He reached into his coat and jerked out a pistol. Frank shot him in the head, driving him back down onto the ground.
Or not.
Frank checked on the other gunmen. They were all dead, just as he expected to find them. He knew that luck had been with him today, but it had been aided greatly by daring, audacity, and a steady hand and eye. Frank then looked toward the mansion, and what he saw surprised him. He saw the front door move. Somebody had just slammed it shut. Chuck's body no longer lay there, blocking the door.